medic named Art.
Art.
And thanks, Keith, for really calling me, for even having me in mind, you know. You know, you take a risk. You take a risk with an addict like me, you know, because where I come from, you know, put the earmuffs on the kitties right now. Put it on. Put the earmuffs on the kitties, man, because I use some impetuous words. But no, I know. You know, some people get so caught up in the part about swearing at meetings, whether it measures your spiritual condition. I've seen many people, actually one of them sponsored me at one time, that carried themselves very well, but when caught in a dilemma of life, regardless of what it is, didn't handle it very well. So you tell me, he didn't cuss or nothing, but when he got faced with the realities of his disease, or the disease of somebody else, for that matter, how are you going to handle it? I think that's what's important. You know, I don't think you should be measuring. Like, if you don't know where I came from, then don't look at where I'm at, and don't try to measure where I should go. But being mindful of my own respect for myself, you know, I'm going to make sure that I say things that don't offend the children. Man, it's so good to be back here, man, to see y'all, man. You don't know how much love I got for this area. You know, coming from, I'm originally from Buffalo, New York. My clean date is 2/14/92. That's right. Valentine's Day. That's right. I'm a sweetheart. That's right. That's right. And you know, and really the only reason why it is on that date is because I got clean in November. It was November the 12th that I got clean in 91. Got 90 days clean. It was coming up on Valentine's Day. And I went back to visit my ex, who was still using, and I knew what would make her smile. I knew if I went and bought that package, I could get a big, bright smile out of her and whatever else I wanted. And I went back, and I used that day. And, you know, it was something about that time that just made me feel, you know, I don't, I understand the drug is a symptom of our disease, but it ain't the disease itself, you know. And I know I went back there for gratification, and I thought I could find it again in the drug, and I took a hit, and when I took that hit, I was expecting to feel something, and all I felt was stupid. I felt stupid. I felt like I've struggled. I have been to 5 rehabs, 3 detoxes. You know what I mean? And finally, I'm on track to do what I need to do in my life. And I'm going to come back to this situation, which I know never worked before. Now I got clean. I think it's going to work again. And it doesn't work. I know it's not going to work. And I try to use what I always use to get what I always got. And I got what I always got. But when I took that first hit, that's all I could feel was like a sign. It felt like a sign was on my head that just said, stupid, 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 stupid. You know? And I looked at her and I said, you know what? Here's the ties that bind us together. Don't tell nobody. You don't tell nobody. Won't nobody know I keep my clean time? That's between me and you. I'm thinking the secret between me and you gonna make me and her bond even some more. You know what I mean? And I was walking around the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous without the clean time that I had, claiming I had that clean time. Who am I hurting? Who am I hurting? Who am I fooling? And I remember getting honest about it. And it's something about the honesty that you get from other people, that you hear other people with the courage to say the things that they need to say, that gives you courage in your convictions. That's what this program is built on. It's built on empathy. It's built on somebody else doing the same thing that I want to do that was just like me. That's what this program is built on. We needed that. We needed that. We needed that to break away from the other fellowship so we can walk into the room, we can identify, we didn't feel like we was different. That was one of the problems with me my whole life. No. The problem that I had my whole life coming up as an only child was that I thought I was missing something. I thought something was wrong with me. I got messages from my parents that told me something was wrong with me. I wasn't enough. I grew up in some housing projects. It was really rough. Being an only child, I ain't had nobody to have my back. They was taking my lunch money when I went to school. I had to learn how to fight to defend myself. And I was smart in school. I was a smart student. I used to love animals. I came up like that. I was that kind of kid that enjoyed, you know, animals. Matter of fact, when I turned 14 years old, I got a job as an animal caretaker at a cancer research institute. Because I just loved animals all the time. I was that kind of kid. But I remember at some point my father saying to me, "You really good at school, boy. But what you gonna do when them boys get a hold to you?" And as a child, I always thought that the things that I was doing, I wanted to make my parents proud. I wanted my parents to see me and to see their child and say, "Boy, my son." You know, I wanted to make my parents proud. But when I heard that, it just said, "What am I doing it for? What am I getting A's for? What am I doing all the stuff that I need to do in school? What am I doing this stuff for?" And unbeknownst to me, because it started off in behavior, I started down the downhill journey. I started doing stuff that I wanted to do with little girls. I'm talking about I was little too. I'm not talking about adults with little girls. I was a little kid, 5 years old also. You know what I mean? Didn't know the difference. Hiding. You knew you was wrong. I was hiding. I knew I was guilty. I was hiding. You know, but I was doing stuff that I knew that I was wrong. But I was doing this stuff because, well, you know, it felt good. It felt good. It made me feel good. It gave me a temporary fix to a permanent problem. I remember asking Keith when he asked me to share. I text Keith and I said, "So what should I share on?" And Keith said, "Well, we don't really got no topic." He said, "But the theme of the Journey Continues this year is an inside job." I said, "Okay, that's easy. That's easy. That's a great topic for me. That's a, you know, one thing that I always appreciated about, you know, the Journey Continues and all that, you know, is that a lot of the different themes that go along with, you know, if you look at some of those themes, you know, you can really get some, you know, it's some recovery in just the themes alone themselves sometimes. You know what I mean? Where it brought me to a place where I needed to take a look at, you know, me and my man Nate came up with me from Harrisburg. You know, my home group is All Is Welcome. It's on a Wednesday night. in Harrisburg, you happen to be in Harrisburg on a Wednesday night, and you ain't got nothing to do, all are welcome. This is a very diverse meeting. It's not, you know, in the hood, full of hood. It's a diverse meeting. Because recovery, disease of addiction, huh? Don't discriminate. Right? You know, but I'm grateful for the reflection that our meeting has on recovery as a whole. Because you find that division in the fellowship sometimes. But we was on the way up here and we were talking about, you know, I'm just so grateful, man. Thanks for coming up with me, Nate, man. You know, thanks for, you know, the conversations that we had and, you know, all of that. We, you know, because me and Nate really, we knew each other as acquaintance, right? But now we're starting to build a friendship, you know. And so what happened was that we started exchanging things that happened to us in our lives as we were coming up, you know. And coming up in life, there was a lot of, I don't want to go in there, but see, you know, look, I don't need to go into the drug really, because the reality of it is that if drugs was the answer, then what's the question? See, the problem that existed initially was me. The initial problem was, what was wrong with me? Why was I trying to find something outside of myself to fix something inside myself? That was the problem. I was looking for an external fix. And I didn't know and didn't understand and had no understanding that it was something that I need to fix inside, because I was content with my content. Hello? I was content with my content. I understood where I came from, who I was, didn't know, didn't have an idea. What is a defect? Huh? I didn't know what a defect was. I had no idea that I needed to change some things. Everybody that was around did the same thing. That's one of the things that we bubbled up on when we was coming through, was that, imagine, it was the gratitude that we received with the acknowledgement of what Narcotics Anonymous has done with our life. Having the troubles and the problems and the defects that you have in your life, and imagine all the people that's out there, all the people that's out there that have no solution. Imagine all the people that's roaming the world that's got all the issues that we had or still have, all of those issues that they're roaming the world and they got no solution, man. Do you understand how grateful we should be? I got a problem and I got a solution, where there's so many people that just don't know. They don't even know that they even got a problem. Look, when I go see my mom sometimes, man, she don't know she got a problem. She don't know she got a problem, man. And I got to understand that she don't know she got a problem, so I got to practice some stuff I learned in here when I deal with her, because I know she can't change. I know she ain't gonna change. So I'm so grateful for a program that gives me a roadmap on how to change my behavior. The behavior doesn't go anywhere. The behavior that I have is gonna be with me for the rest of my life. It is who I am. The defects that I have are who I am. But the assets that I have are who I am too. And I don't have to live on the defects, but the best thing that I got going is that being able to see the defect now and being able to stop it once it shows up. I wasn't aware of that when I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. So I'm wandering around life, early in life, and I'm just harming people. My first child was born, I was 14 years old. I thought I was a dad. I was in gangs. I'm running around taking stuff from people and beating up people and stealing out of stores. And it was about how I was seen and how I looked in the eyes of others. It was important at that time to try to get the best clothes and dress the best. Get the best girl. If you had the cutest girl, you was the toughest guy. You was the flyest guy if you had the flyest girl. And you had fly clothes with it too, man, what? Huh? Who you talking to? You better go over there and talk to them squares or they don't. Listen, that's what was important. Understand this. That was what projected to be important. But that's not what I had. So since I didn't have it, I wasn't enough. And so what I found was a temporary fix. Is that when I started using, I had the courage to go after and acquire. I had the courage to, I was afraid to talk to women. But when I started using, hey, what's going on? How you doing? Huh? You know, when I got the alcohol in me, I had the courage to go do the things that, you know, but I didn't understand that it wasn't the man that was coming. It was an image that was coming. It was a trumped up image that I had created. I'd create a trumped up image for the gangs, a trumped up image for the corner. A false image for my parents, a false image for the job, because I was doing all this stuff and going to work and acting like I was normal. I remember going back to a job after I had got clean for a while, and I seen one of the guys and I said, did you know that I was doing all this different stuff? I had lost the job, got fired, everything. I had went back at this time to make amends so that they could see what the changes that I had made through this program. And they were glad to see me in the condition that I was in. They were like, man, we so glad that you not like you used to be. And I said, did you really notice how I was? He said, man, we could smell you every time you come in the office, man. You know, because I used to wake up to a 40 and a joint. You know what I mean? And I'm walking in the office and I'm thinking, they can't smell nothing, you know, that was my regular. And when I got off of work, it got deep. It got way worse. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking all the time that this is, you know, who I am. And I got this image going on in all these different places, not having a clue as to who I really was. Until I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. After all the, you know, there's a million stories in the naked city. And I'm talking about if I got butt naked right here, right now, there is not enough time for me to share it. There isn't enough time for all the things that I went through. All I gotta say is I'm an addict. And it got really, really bad. It got really, really bad, and when it got to the very end, I was sleeping and camping out on dirty clothes that we intended to wash because we had no more clothes that was clean. I was wasted. I was camped out on those dirty clothes. That was the bottom line. The relationships were all burnt up with everybody and everything. All bridges were burnt down, and at the end of this story, of those thousand stories of the naked person or the naked city, at the end of the story, I was butt naked, just me, myself, and I. And I can clearly see, you know where they talk about your pain staring you straight in the face? When you see your addiction and it's, you finally look in the mirror and you see your addiction staring you square in the face and you looking at, wow, wow. Wow, how bad did it get? It got pretty bad for me. At that point, man, it was like when I walked in the rooms at that point. Now, I'm talking about this is after 5 rehabs, 3 detoxes and all that. At that point, when I walk in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I had no clue because I had failed every attempt to try to stay clean. I had no clue on how I was going to stay clean. I had no clue because I didn't know how. I didn't know you needed somebody to teach you. Huh? We talking about all I knew was what I did on the outside. There was no substance on the inside. There was no principles involved. And so when I came in the room and started casting nominees, I was like this here. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Where do you want me to go? And I was grateful. Look, I came in the Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in a relationship. 30 days in Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, got in a relationship where a girl had 3 years clean, got in a relationship as soon as I came in the door, and she told me to get a sponsor. And that's what made me go get a sponsor. Because she said, you need to get you a sponsor. And I was like, okay, you know, who you think is a good sponsor? She said, that guy over there. In my mind, I was like, he's too square. He don't know enough. It was some guys over here that was sitting over here. He was sitting over there. And the guys over here, they had the Mr. T kit. They had rings on every finger. You know what I mean? And there was kick back like this here, you know, and I was like, no, I want them guys over there to be my sponsor. They seem to be the ones that got the success. They know how to get the women. They know how to get the clothes. They know how to get the jewelry. And I started thinking, if I stop using all the money I was spending on using, man, I could be just like them. And she said, no, you need to go over there to that dude over there. I went over to that dude that was just plain George. George F., he's passed away since then. And I went over to him, and in Buffalo, there's not a lot of rehabs. There's a few rehabs, but it's not a therapeutic community. So there's not a whole lot. So in Buffalo, they got a saying that says, if you want a temporary sponsor, you must plan on being clean temporarily. And I went to him and I said, man, could you be my temporary sponsor? And he said, yeah. At that time, he wasn't taking on any temporary sponsor. Nobody takes on temporary sponsees. Either you take your sponsor on or you get somebody else to be a sponsor. That's it. But he said, yeah. And I got him to be my sponsor only to find out he sponsored all those guys that had the gold on. But luckily for me, you know, let me say this, thank God for a thoroughly whooped butt. Huh? Because with the butt whooping that I had from my active addiction, I was ready to do what he told me to do and not try to follow what my instincts was trying to tell me to do. Because mine was still being driven by the disease of addiction, and I didn't know that I was still being driven by, and I'm still today being driven by my defects of character. They don't go away. Don't get it twisted. They still here. They still. Don't get it twisted. They still here. You know. But I understand them. I see them better. I know when they show up, and so I'm able to dodge and avoid and not act out on them the way that I used to. But I still, first thing come, if you come up here and smack me in my face right now, it ain't gonna be, if it pleases God, it pleases me. It ain't gonna be that. I just want you to know. I still got my knife. I just want you to know. It's only this big, yo. It's only this big. It used to be that big. It's only this big now. Only use it to peel my oranges at work. That's all. But you know what I mean? But,
No, I don't. Thank you.
Huh?
I don't, thank you.
But, I don't know. I lost track right there. I just lost track somewhere. I just lost track anyway. But anyway, coming in the room, and that guy, I was just so grateful that guy was a stepologist. What he believed in the steps. He really believed in, you know, the steps being the change in your life. You know, me and Nate was talking about this, you know, and it was one thing that my experience that I went through also was coming through this process and having sponsees and stuff. I used to kind of think that my sponsees reflected my personality, so I had to get my sponsees to live a certain type of way so that I could look good. So, because if I'm sponsoring them, then they should be looking a certain type of way. And I remember this dude, he was from Texas or something, and he came into the meeting, and I was sharing about you know, yeah, my sponsees is acting like this and acting like that, so I had to pull them to the side and pull them up on what they was doing, and, you know, and I had to, you know, hit them with this and hit them with that, you know. And after I finished sharing, this guy came and shared after me, and he said, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe y'all recover different up here in Buffalo, but where I come from, we don't even worry. Look it, I tell you right now, I give my sponsee $10 right now. I say, you want to get high? Go ahead, go on, get high. Shoot, I don't stop them from doing nothing. Anything they want to do, he said, because what I know is this here, is that when the pain get great enough, they going to stop. He said, I'm going to take them just where they, you want to go to the strip club? Come on, let's go to the strip club. Go on in there and get them girls. And I used to be like, man, this dude is sick. He going to kill his sponsees, man. That's how I felt. This dude is sick, man. What's wrong with him? But the reality was, man, is that that's truly, I mean, I'm not going to go to the extent that he went to, but the reality of it is that I'm powerless enough over my disease. How am I have enough power to take care of yours? And there's some things that I needed to experience, they need to experience, we need to experience in order for us to get the lesson that we need, so that that lesson that we get will be something that's in us. That's going to be part of who we are. It's an inside job. I can't give it to them. I can't, you know, we can carry the message, but we can't carry the addict. I've seen so many people try to carry the addict, trying to make sure the addict get what the addict needs for their recovery, not recognizing your powerlessness. Look it, that's why I say thank God for a thoroughly whooped butt, because when the teacher's ready, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. When it's time, they will do what they need to do. They'll seek the help that they need to have. In the process, in the meantime, I know my job, my only job here, is to teach them how the steps work. That's it. It says in our literature, it says that's all. It don't say, it says that's all we have to give. It don't say we have this to give and that. It says that's all we have. That's all we have to give, and that's all we have to give. Because there's a higher power that's in play. There's a larger authority that's in play. That if I just step out the way and do the stuff, look, we talk about in our literature that we lead by example, not by direction. How am I living? Am I living trying to make sure that I control your life? Or am I living to make sure I control mine? I need to be looking at what I'm doing and how I'm living. Because when they see how I live and I'm living the right way, it's going to give them the image and the picture that they need for their life. I had to learn that. Because I thought that all I needed to do was know this stuff, understand this stuff. And once I know this stuff and understand this stuff, I could tell this stuff to them. But while I'm telling it to them, I could be showing off for her over there. And I'll share some stuff over here. You know, I was telling Nate on the way up here, I shared at a meeting one time. This is a couple months ago. And after I finished sharing at the meeting, this girl that never spoke, all of a sudden, how you doing? She's coming up giving me hugs every time I come in the meeting. I'm married. There ain't no reservation. Reservations canceled. Because my integrity is more important than a jump shot. My integrity is more. Look, it ain't because my wife is going to get on my case. It ain't because how my wife is going to feel. It's because of the commitment that I have inside to God of my understanding that says I don't live like that. That's me. That's the person I am. I'm not compromising that for nothing. I'm not giving that up just for a moment of pleasure that's going to turn into catastrophe. I'm not giving it up. Not only that, in that commitment itself, by just saying that and committing to that in my spirit, frees me up to be the man that I truly meant to be. At least that's one more thing that's not calling me and not pulling me out of my defects. One more thing. Look, let me just say this here. I got to be honest about it because I've sponsored a lot of womanizers. I need to be honest about this part. never was that dude. I never was the guy that got all the women. When I came in the room with Narcotics Anonymous, I was the guy that came in here that was tore up from the drugs, and not the women was not part of my story. It wasn't a whole big part of my story. So it was a defect that I didn't even have to even worry about dealing with, because I didn't have that defect in the first place. It was really, I'm going to tell you what was really enlightening to me was the fact that initially when I was out in the street, all my life I thought it was a defect. I thought it was a defect because I couldn't get women like other guys could get women. I thought something was wrong with me. And you know what? It was. Look, I was rolling up, how you doing? Wild Iris Rose on your breath. Cotton mouth. Just smoked weed. Ain't took a bath in weeks. And you rolling up, how you doing? Yeah, it was something wrong. It was something wrong. You know what I mean? And but I'm grateful that because of not having that going on, because I know a lot of guys that come into fellowship that can get a lot of women and can't stop going from woman to woman to woman. And if that's your defect and that's the one that you got, then that's the one that you got to work on. I don't need to work on it for you. I'm not saying that you need to stop. I'm not saying that you need to live like me. I'm saying that I'm grateful that I don't have to go through that one. I'm grateful that I don't have to. That's not one that I have to face, that I have to deal with. Of course, it grows its ugly head in early recovery, because the first thing to come alive when you get clean is the physical. And the physical got clean, and I seen one that I thought that was like, you know, and we were just talking about levels of relationships on the way coming up in here. And I, you know, look, I've been here for 27 years, man. It's been a lot, a whole lot of different things that I went through, different processes that I went through to get me to be whoever God want me to be now. I just need to say this here, right here in the middle, right there, because it just hit me in my spirit. Imagine this. Because I've been through a lot of stuff in here and done a lot of things in my life, in active addiction and in recovery. But imagine this. Imagine tapping into the wealth, a stream of knowledge that is so vast, so deep, so understanding. It just reminds me of this right here. So there was this guy, these old bunch of scientists, right? There's a whole bunch of scientists. And the scientist was feeling about themselves, because now, you know, they can make a man build a limb, build an eye, put an arm, start a baby from scratch. They can do some stuff now, you know, with atoms and all kind of, you know, stuff, you know. They could do a lot of different things in science nowadays. So scientists start feeling like, you know, it's a theory anyway. Maybe this God don't really exist. You know, we can do everything that whatever alleged God can do. So maybe this real God, like we was thinking about, you know, really doesn't exist. So God got wind to it. And God said, what? Wait a minute, let me go talk to these fools. God came down and he said, I heard that y'all thought y'all could do anything that I could do. And the scientists was feeling themselves, and the scientists stepped back and they said, yeah, we think we can. So God said, well, since you feel that way, he said, I challenge you. And the scientist said, well, we'll accept the challenge. So God reached down into the dirt and some clay. He took the clay and he formed a man. After he took the clay and he formed a man, he said, okay, your turn. The scientist said, we can do that too. They reached down to the clay and God said, get your own clay. Huh? Understand what I'm saying is that what is the depth? What is the depth of this knowledge, this wisdom that we're seeking. It's endless. Yes, we know maybe where water comes from, but where the molecules, where the idea, where the thought come that put it together in the first place. The reason why I'm saying this is not to put you way out here, but to understand that the humility that I need to have as a human being is right here. Nowhere. What I understand and what I know today, man, I better keep on searching. I better keep on working, keep on looking, because in the meantime and in between time, my disease, my defects are still gaining ground. Because they don't go nowhere except to another area. They may go over here to food. They may go over there to sex. They may go over who knows where, gambling. I mean, those are things that we can see, you know, right there in front of us. But the disease goes many different places, and it takes us many, and all those places that it goes are aimed to kill us and take our focus off where we need to go in our lives and in our journey. You know, I remember one of the first things that I learned in the process of recovery, the first quote that I learned in recovery, my first tape, was the guy said, it's not the end of the journey that matters, but the journey that matters in the end. Am I taking care of the journey at hand? Am I doing what I need to do for myself in the moment? Yeah, sure, I do prayer and meditation. Sure, I've been through the steps about 3 times, and who knows how many times with sponsees. I've done a lot of that work, and it served me well, and I've learned a lot. I've done a lot of service. Service gives you things inside. Service gives you some stuff inside you that you may not recognize you ever had. But if you go into service without doing the work that you need to do on yourself, you may be going in there with a bunch of chaos. I've seen it. Even at the world level, people coming in there that's been around for 30 years, not recognizing that where they at in their rebellion, where they at in their controlling, where they at in trying to make things be the way that they perceive them to be, instead of just bringing a conscience to a conscience, bringing a God conscience to a conscience, just coming there and saying, well, I think this might work. And if they say, we don't want to do it that way, well, okay, I just threw an idea in there. No, no. Don't go like that. Not an area. It'd be like, no, what? No, well, in that case, if you ain't going to do it the way that I think it ought to be done, I'm quitting. I ain't never coming back here. I'm out of here. I'm done with this service. Y'all talking about, I just met a guy not too long ago. He ended up quitting H&I because H&I wouldn't give him the literature that he needed to take to H&I commitment that H&I wasn't even part of, that H&I never did, H&I too, that he was going by himself thinking that H&I is supposed to support it. He just, I don't know if y'all understand that. He just started doing it himself, and he came to the area and said, well, I need literature for this facility over here. 30 years clean. Still self-willing. And not understanding that they said, no, we don't give you that. They need to get an H&I meeting in there and the whole. And he got pissed off and said, I ain't coming back to the area no more. And I'm done with H&I. And forget about y'all doing stuff wrong. And so what? It's us. It's us. You know, it's a lot of things, man, that in this process, man, that I'm so grateful that I learned to get out the way. To just do my part, to do my service, but most of all, what I'm really grateful for, more so than anything, is that I did the work on me so I could see me when I show up. So I had the freedom of the imprisonment that I always put myself in. A prisoner of my own mind, condemned by my own guilt. I stayed there, lived there for a long, long period of time thinking, something was wrong with y'all. I didn't know no better. My sponsor, I called my sponsor like maybe about a month ago, and he hit me with this, but it was like, you know, it's really funny, Rich, how sometimes you be reading literature over and over again. You've been reading literature for how long you been here, you know what I mean? And then you read something real simple, and it'd be like, you know, and I told him, I said, well, you know, this happened and this happened, and my wife wouldn't do this here, and my wife wouldn't do that, you know, and so I had to go do this, and I forgot what the situation was, but he said, you know what? He said, you just came from spiritual theory to spiritual reality. And then it dawned on me, like, damn, I am powerless. I mean, come on, I've done the steps over and over again and teach them and everything, but still sometimes in those situations with my significant other, with my children, you know, on a job or stuff like that, I still think that I still want things to go my way. They still need to go the way that I think that they should go. And if you don't go the way that I think you should go, something is wrong with you. Not trusting the power that I've entrusted in my life all this time. I gotta trust the power. Sometimes the power is not gonna allow me to do something because it's not time. I don't know the timing of the power. Sometimes things don't happen because it's not time. And I gotta be okay with the timing factor. Sometimes because I have the lesson doesn't mean that God quit giving it out. And I got to fall back and allow others to get the lesson that they need. In our literature, again, we get a great freedom to allow others to be wrong. That freedom is, man, that I don't have to be in there enforcing it and making it right. Enforced morality lacks the power of living a spiritual life. It's all in our literature. That I don't have to be the one that's controlling and making stuff. That doesn't mean that you don't get involved and you know, give suggestions. But you don't have to, I don't have to make it happen. I don't have to force the outcome. I don't have to make sure that it turned out the way I think it should. And in the process of that, I get what we pray for every day in our meetings. That we pray for all the time. I pray for peace, man. I get peace in my spirit knowing that when a newcomer share and that newcomer is looking for some help and I know I got the answer, I don't need to say a word because I know that the same power that gave me the answer is there for him. That he's going to get the answer if he's sincere from his heart, wanting the answer, he's going to get what he needs. I don't have to be, I'm an addict, Neymar. Let me share this with y'all. You know what I mean? That's why they talk about some of this stuff, man. It's just like right there. Silence is golden. Silence is golden. Okay, let's go to it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought of as a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. I gotta allow people to process, man. That's one of the things that I learned here. And continue. It said continue. Journey continues. Continue. Personal inventory. Continue. To do the work that I need to do. Continue to take a look at me. Continue to understand that there's so much out there for me to learn. I could never get enough. That I won't OD. And all it's going to do is continue to uplift my spirit and make me a better man. Continue. A better man for what? Look, let me say this here. Man. The girls I used to date. Man. When they walk down the street, they had that little wiggle. And I used to be like, ooh, woo. I know that was an S. Stood for snake. And I was going towards pain because of what it something looked like. I'm talking about the outside stuff. Now, because of the man that I am today, because of the inside stuff, I'm attracting things that I never could attract before. My wife today, she's past the bar. What? Fuck I'm doing with her? Oh, I didn't mean a square. Excuse me. But I mean, that's what I asked myself, man. Where are we level? Where are we equal at? It ain't my doing. My first wife, Rich knew her. She was a jewel. She used to come to meetings, rob everybody of not going to meetings. Because every meeting she went to, she had oxygen on her and everything. And any kind of excuse you had that you thought you didn't have to go to meetings, she robbed you of any excuse. Because she was in there recovering her butt off and at the same time sick as I don't know what. She died in recovery clean in my house, in my arms. You understand what I'm saying? The man that Narcotics Anonymous made to be able to deal, to be able to handle, to make sure that everything was taken. I ain't have to call her. She had three kids, family, relatives. I ain't have to call a soul. I had everything taken care of. I looked in the mirror and I saw a man that I didn't even know existed because of what Narcotics Anonymous had given me, because of what it had turned me into. That when I got clean the first time, there was nobody in my life. Now it's been years, like 10 years since my wife has been dead. My stepchildren are coming to pick me up in September so that we can go watch a football game with my step-grandchild who goes to Cornell. Their mother's dead. They don't have to deal with me no more in my life or their life. But they want to still be around me and still deal with me because they appreciate the man who took care of their mother. Man, that's a man that I'm proud to look at in the mirror. I'm proud to be that man. This ain't no brag. This ain't no boast. This is what the program did. It made me a man that I'm proud to be. If it could do it for me, man. Huh? I'm an addict just like you. Yeah, man, I thank y'all for letting me share, man. I'm an addict named Art.